the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, and welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today we're going to be talking about pregnancy at older ages. It all came down with the news that the world's oldest successful pregnancy, the oldest woman to have a baby, was a woman in Romania who had the baby at age 66. She's about to turn 67. And, of course, you can do the quick math and figure out that she is probably not going to live long enough to raise this child. It raises a host of issues related to biomedical ethics, parenthood, and, frankly, everything from reproductive rights to parental responsibility. We're going to be talking about this today. We're going to have a special guest in just a little bit. But get ready to call and join this conversation. This is one of those issues that is likely to get a lot of traction out there. And yet, it's largely been swept off of the media screen because so many other things were happening, and including the inauguration of the President of the United States and then the tsunami and all the rest. But we're going to go back to it because I think it's really important. And a part of the reason why it is important is because there's new news on this. There are new developments, and it comes down to the fact that this woman did not present her pregnancy as it is in reality. And we're going to talk about exactly what that means in the second segment. You get ready to call and join this conversation at number 877-893-8255. Toll free nationwide, 877-893-TALK. This is, of course, the weekend of the anniversary of the infamous Roe v. Wade decision in January of 1973. And today in Washington, D.C., they held the March for Life. That is an annual event. And because of the inauguration, it was held on Monday. And in the cold, many, many pro-life advocates were there marching silently and yet eloquently in the nation's capital. President Bush spoke to them by telephone. He said this: "What I'm saying is we're making progress, and this progress is a tribute to your perseverance and to the prayers of the people. I want to thank you especially for the civil way that you've engaged one of America's most contentious issues. I encourage you to take heart from your achievements, because a true culture of life cannot be sustained solely by changing laws. We need most of all to change hearts. And that is what we're doing, seeking common ground where possible and persuading increasing numbers of our fellow citizens of the rightness of our cause." End quote. That President George W. Bush to participants in the March on Life today in Washington, D.C. And I chose those particular words to focus on as we're talking about this today because I think that is the very cornerstone of where the president ought to be making his case. Yes, there are legal issues that must be addressed. Yes, there are judicial decisions, most of all the Roe v. Wade decision, that must be reversed. But the ultimate problem is not in the courts, and the ultimate problem is not in the law. The ultimate problem is in the human heart. And that's exactly where we need to be addressing our moral case against abortion. Well, a lot of Americans woke up this morning to find out about the death of Johnny Carson, one of the biggest names in American entertainment. He died in the result of a long illness at age 79 on Sunday morning, and the death was emphysema, according to news reports. It's interesting that when Johnny Carson retired several years ago, he largely fell out of the public eye. That was by design. When this is a man who, when he retired, really retired. But throughout his life, he had been an entertainer. As young as at age 14, he was known as the Great Carsoni, doing acts at VFW clubs and other occasions there, especially in rural Nebraska, and he was a very honored and favorite son of that state. His hometown was Norfolk, Nebraska, and that hometown benefited greatly from Mr. Carson's philanthropy during the time that he was especially engaged in the entertainment industry. Of course, he was most famous for being the host of The Tonight Show for the longest run, and a lot of people just grew up with Johnny Carson, a part of the entertainment context. And I had someone said this afternoon, said a lot of baby boomers just think of Johnny Carson when they think of nighttime entertainment, and that's certainly true. And yet, it's a reminder to us as well of the power of entertainers, of actors, and of comedians in American culture. It is a profound influence, and an awful lot of people, an awful lot of careers were made or were broken there with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. And it's hard now, with all of the multiplicity of entertainment options, with all the cable television shows and with DVDs and VCRs and all the rest, it's hard to remember the power of just one man as Johnny Carson had it there on The Tonight Show. And I think a part of his charm was that he did come from small town America, Norfolk, Nebraska. And that rings a bell with me because that is the very area where my father-in-law comes from, Fairbury, Norfolk, Nebraska. And when you look at this, it is a reminder that many of the people who shaped American culture have come from little towns, little farming communities where they've gone on to make it big, and Johnny Carson did that. He's not the only significant American individual to die over the weekend. The other death was Rosemary Woods at age 87, Richard Nixon's loyal secretary. Now, the baby boomers will remember Johnny Carson as an entertainer. They will certainly remember Rosemary Woods as a picture of loyalty, even to the point of being ludicrous. Because, of course, it was Rosemary Woods who was famous for trying to explain the infamous 18-and-a-half-minute gap in the Watergate tapes. At one point, she even tried to show reporters just how it could have happened that she would accidentally have hit a pedal that was the opposite end of her desk, leading to a nationally broadcast demonstration of how she could have had one foot over here and another foot over there and not realize what she was doing. She was willing to really embarrass herself with this contortion because of her loyalty to Richard M. Nixon. It's hard to find that kind of loyalty these days. She said later, "I am most dreadfully sorry." She said it was a terrible mistake that she had pressed the wrong button on the pedal and recorded over the tape. Well, a lot of Americans haven't thought of Rosemary Woods in a long time, but she died just this past weekend at age 87. Coming up at the end of January, January 30, is the big event of the vote in Iraq. The first national plebiscite, the first great exercise in democracy for the Iraqi people. And there are those who are determined to make sure it does not happen. Abu Musab al-Zarqawi has now said that he will vow to oppose this with all his might. He has declared a fierce war on the evil principle of democracy. Those are his words. And so you see exactly what his ambition and aim is. It is to destroy the balloting process, the vote itself. And he issued a threat. Anyone who tries to help set up the system is part of it. And so he's clearly saying anyone who participates in this election, not only as a candidate, but as a voter, is making himself or herself a target. And that's a reminder of the kind of lawlessness we are up against. Jim Hoagland of the Washington Post perceptively wrote just a few weeks ago that what we are fighting in Iraq is not a partisan divide or even merely an ideological divide. It is a divide between the forces of order and the forces of nihilism. And al-Zarqawi represents the forces of nihilism. Good news out of Ukraine, where just yesterday in Kiev, Viktor Yushchenko was inaugurated as the new president, and it was a powerful moment. After all, this was the candidate who was supposedly defeated in a rigged election just several weeks ago. As he stood before the people of Ukraine, his face was disfigured by poison, but he took the oath of office with confidence, and this is what he said, explaining the vote. Quote, "Armed only by their faith and beliefs, the people won a beautiful and peaceful victory. It's a victory of freedom over tyranny, of law over lawlessness, of future over past." Eloquent words from a man whose very face testifies of the price he has paid to lead his people. And it's good news on the world scene whenever democracy breaks out. Let's go back to last Thursday when President George W. Bush delivered his second inaugural address and spoke of America's role in defending freedom and liberty throughout the world and opposing tyranny wherever it is found. And I said at the time, when I called in from Washington, that the big test was going to be to see who would speak against that. Who would speak on behalf of tyranny? Well, in coming days, we're going to be following that, because all you have to do is look at the European newspapers and look at some American editorial pages, and you'll find that there are some, including some of the New York Times or the Washington Post and some others who are ready to speak on behalf of tyranny, who are now saying, you know, it's just unrealistic to think that everyone can taste freedom. I knew they'd come out, and President Bush has smoked them out with a second inaugural address. In the Senate, one of the big questions is whether or not President George W. Bush's judicial nominees will get to the point of confirmation, or even whether they will get to a vote, because as you will remember in the last Congress, Democrats obstructed the process by using the technique of a filibuster that avoided even the possibility of bringing these very qualified candidates to a vote. Now, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, United States Senator from Tennessee, says that will come to an end. He has threatened to go nuclear and says that the Democrats insist on filibustering, he will declare a change in the Senate rules and ask for a ruling from the parliamentarian to remove the filibuster as an acceptable instrument in discussions over judicial nominations. Ladies and gentlemen, if he doesn't do this, if he does not fulfill this pledge, then it really doesn't matter in terms of judicial nominations who the President of the United States is. This is a constitutional battle, and it is Senator Frist's responsibility to follow through with this threat. He needs to make it a promise. If the Democrats are going to filibuster, then he will demand that the rules be changed in order that democracy can continue and the president's constitutional authority and responsibility in the nomination of judges can be honored. After all, he is president of the United States. Well, we're going to be talking today about a woman in Romania who had a baby at age 67. 67. Past menopause. Needless to say, past the usual childbearing years. What are the ethical principles and consequences of this kind of pregnancy? What does it mean for us? What does it mean for her? What does it mean for her child? What does it mean to you? Get ready to give us a call. The number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Headlines across the world took note just a few weeks ago when at age 66, and that's about to be 67, Adriana Eliescu, who is an academic and author in Romania, gave birth to a little girl. The little girl was of a very small birth weight. She was one of two babies born. The other baby was born dead, stillborn, and it now turns out that there was a third baby who had been conceived but miscarried earlier in the pregnancy at about 10 weeks. Now, immediately this set off a fury of controversy and conversation over the ethical consequences and meaning of the use of such fertility treatments in a woman at age 67. Obviously, a 67-year-old woman would not naturally bear a child. And there was also some confusion early on because of the way this story was reported. Because originally it said that she had received the gametes or the male seed, the semen, through artificial insemination. Now it turns out, because that was obviously implying that she had used her own eggs, but medical authorities are now saying the chance of that is less than 1%. As a matter of fact, in the Times of London, the medical authorities reported that the chance of a woman at that age producing an egg is less than 0.2%. But now they're admitting that this was a donor egg and donor sperm. And so what we have here is basically a 67-year-old woman who was an incubator for a baby that she arranged more or less like a consumer would order any other product. Now, there are several levels of this discussion. First of all, the use of in vitro fertilization technology in the first place, and then the context of the fact that Ms. Eliescu is not only age 67, but she is unmarried, the fact that this is not her egg, and obviously there is no husband for the husband's contribution. And then you're also looking here at the age factor, 66, about to turn 67. When this child is 16, she'll be 82. That's pretty hard to factor in here. With us on the phone is Dr. William Cottrere, who is a medical ethicist and a medical doctor, and he is also a professor here at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He brings a wealth of medical and theological knowledge to these questions. He's been an officer in the Christian Medical and Dental Association and a widely published author on issues related to fertility and reproduction. Dr. Cottrere, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mueller.
Bill, when you look at this situation, you know that all over the world there's now conversation about the ethics of this particular technology in this particular case.
Right.
Do you have grave concerns about this?
Well, from my standpoint as a physician, it's particularly shocking since I practiced in the area where we did infertility treatments that a doctor would subject a 66-year-old woman to a pregnancy under any circumstances. But by using in vitro and obviously transferring multiple embryos, he put her life at risk.
Well, there's no doubt about that. As a matter of fact, Arthur Kaplan at the University of Pennsylvania says that that may be the most significant moral issue here. I'm not sure about that, but it certainly is one of the most significant moral issues. But Dr. Cottrere, let's think about the life of the embryos for just a moment, because we had one miscarriage, we had another stillborn, and then one live birth. But that live birth at such a low birth weight that this baby is going to take rather intensive treatment for at least about 6 weeks before she would weigh even enough to leave the hospital.
Oh, at least, yeah.
So, you know, looking at that, what would be the ethical considerations about not just subjecting the woman's body to this pregnancy, but also these embryos to what amounts to a very high-risk pregnancy?
Well, as you said, this particular case raises many issues at many levels, and if you are going to use embryos created by in vitro, then you want to put them in the most suitable environment because we believe in the sanctity of life, even at that one-cell stage and by the time of embryo transfer, that's 6 to 8 cells at that stage. And to put it in a less than favorable environment from the baby standpoint puts them at what clearly was an unacceptable risk.
Let me tell you, one of the fascinating articles I've seen on this is found at the website for Wired Magazine. And what makes it interesting is that Wired Magazine is kind of this wild-eyed, utopian pro-technology journal, and it's rather libertarian in its tone, but it really has some problems, as evidenced in the article, with this situation of a 67-year-old woman bearing a child. For one thing, they're talking about the honesty issue. Original report said she'd been artificially inseminated. Now they're raising the issue that it couldn't have been that, and the press shouldn't have fallen for this. As a matter of fact, they raise other celebrities who've had babies later in life, Joan London, Gina Davis, Cheryl Teagues, Jane Seymour, suggesting that these actresses have welcomed press coverage of the new children but will not answer questions about donor eggs. Now, Wired Magazine doesn't come from a Christian worldview perspective. Obviously, we have much deeper and broader issues of concern. But it is interesting that even this secular, pro-technology, libertarian journal says this lies about the natural limits of the human body in pregnancy. Now, Dr. Couture, aren't there some pretty significant natural limits?
Oh, absolutely. All of the qualified in vitro clinics will tell you that using a maternal egg over age 40 has a far less than 10% success rate, whereas the success rate in using eggs from women in their 20s, and I'm just giving you the data, not saying whether this is a good or bad idea, just that the data is clear that the success rates are over 50% in terms of healthy fertilization with eggs in the 20s. So those cases that you mentioned, the celebrity pregnancies, to my knowledge, all of them, there may have been an exception, came as the result of donor egg.
So in this case, this is not really the mother of the child, but rather just the womb in which the embryo grew to birth weight.
Precisely right. And while I can appreciate her desire to raise a child, this was so dangerous both for her and the children. If she really had the best for their health and well-being, another uterus, another womb would have carried these children, and then she could have adopted them or something else. I mean, that totally stays apart from the ethical debate on whether one does in vitro, but once these lives exist, then they should be given as best chance as possible.
Dr. Couture, there are two other issues I want to throw out here before we have to go to our break. First of all, in the current issue of the journal Fertility and Sterility, there is a report that indicates that American fertility clinics currently, in the main, have no policies that would take all this into account. Don't you think it would be a good idea to develop some policies along these lines?
Well, I certainly think it would be wise. Most of them do their candidate screening based on the chance of successful outcome, because these clinics are driven by the financial resources that come from successful take-home pregnancies. So many won't even take high-risk pregnancies over age 40 because the rate of success is so low. One would have to ask why they're going for the record of how old if it's not a matter of someone's ego or trying to push the envelope.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, there's one other aspect to this, and that is there are now reports out. This woman, Ms. Eliescu, there in Romania, has revealed that earlier in life, when she was a younger woman at childbearing age, she had two pregnancies and ended them both by abortion.
Right.
And she did this, she said, because under the communist regime, that was the normal birth control methodology. And what's interesting is that she has since developed a deep concern about abortion. She is now very active in the Romanian Orthodox Church and says she believes that abortion is murder. And she felt like she wanted to have this child partly to atone for the murders that she had been complicit in abortions earlier. I can certainly sympathize with that concern. And yet, I think this is a case in which she fails to see the own the concerns about her own pregnancy in terms of pro-life issues. Dr. Couture, it's been a real privilege to have you here on the program today. It's great to have a medical authority to add a voice of scientific insight as we're talking about this, but now it is your opportunity to speak. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about a pregnancy that led to a birth in a woman who's 66 years old, about to be 67. We're talking about a woman that could very well not live to see the survival of her own child to adulthood. We're talking about something that's not just a story in Romania, but now around the world and right here. Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I think a lot of people can sympathize with the fact that here was a woman post-menopause, 66 years old and wanted to have a baby, and she successfully did. Of course, there was one miscarriage and one stillbirth along with these. Three embryos were successfully transferred, but only one came to birth. There's a great controversy. In Great Britain, there are medical authorities clearly saying that this could not happen because of ethical guidelines. In the nation of Romania, where it did happen, the parliament is now considering a law to ban the practice. But here's the question. Do you think that a 66-year-old woman should be allowed access to these fertility technologies so that she could bear a child? Remember, she's not the mother of the child. She just bore the child. But neither the sperm nor the egg came from a marital relationship, and this isn't her egg at all. Not only is it donor sperm, it was a donor egg, both taken, according to the Romanian press, quote, from healthy young people. And in this case, she had been taking hormone drugs for about 9 years to try to stave off menopause, but to no effect. And so this is a postmenopausal pregnancy. And it looks like the little girl may well live. We need to pray so. And the big question is, what now? And where does this lead? The previous oldest was 63, then 65, then 67. What's next? Give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Evelyn calling from Cincinnati, listening on WTSJ. Evelyn, go right ahead.
Okay, what about Sarah in the Bible and Abraham?
Yes?
It's a life. Let it live.
Well, we certainly want to let it live, Evelyn. I mean, there's no doubt that this child is to be welcomed, and the life, we need to pray for this little baby to gain weight so she can leave the hospital. I guess the question is, again, do you think it's right for a woman at age 66 to attempt to get pregnant?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, I'm 72.
Well, bless your heart. But is this something that that you think a woman at age, say, 67 or 72 should be doing? I mean, would it be your desire to have a child now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your honesty. Would you be concerned about how you could take care of the child in coming years? And would you have any concerns about the in vitro fertilization process?
No. People have babies every day, and they die in childbirth, and the child is allowed to live and be raised. I have plenty of relatives that would be glad to take my child.
Well, Evelyn, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate you. You added a lot just by your comment here, and appreciate you calling from Cincinnati. God bless you. Let's go to Joe calling from Michigan, driving along, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Joe, go right ahead.
Thank you, Al. My comment is that in this situation, I think it's wrong as far as that goes, but in this situation, as well as in rape or anything else, only God can give life. So people can do whatever they want, but only God can give that life. And so he done that, and so we have to, you know, although it isn't right, okay?
Yeah, so you're saying that the baby needs to be recognized as fully human, obviously, and fully deserving of our protection and prayer and concern, right?
You bet.
Yeah, well, I'm entirely with you there. My question is the prior question of whether this should have happened in the first place. And, you know, Joe, I think that's kind of analogous to a situation of pregnancy outside of marriage because you know, coming from a Christian biblical perspective, we know that sex was wrong, but hey, the baby's not illegitimate, the sex was. That's why I think we shouldn't refer to children as illegitimate children, but to the conceptions as illegitimate conceptions. Appreciate you listening on XM as you're driving through Michigan, Joe. Thanks for calling. It's time for you to call and join the discussion. You know, when the Times of London ran this news story, they had to open a special bulletin board section for letters because so many people wanted to talk about it. I really have a hunch a lot of you want to talk about this as well. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Should we have rules, regulations that would prevent a postmenopausal woman at age 66 or 67 from in vitro fertilization and from the pregnancy that would bear a child? I mean, just consider the fact there were three. One died stillborn. Another was miscarried earlier on. One very low birth weight baby was born. The mother is now age 66. In just a few months, she'll be 67. You know, what does this say? You know, who's going to raise whom in this situation? By the time the child is 10, she'll be headed towards 80. A lot of people in Great Britain, especially a lot of young people, wrote saying, I don't know how I would handle that as a child. There were some other people who wrote saying, I don't know how I would handle that as a parent, as a mother. And this is, after all, a single, unmarried mother. There's not even a husband to share the responsibility. A lot of questions about this. Give us a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Anna, writing into the Times of London, said this: my mother was 42 when I was born, my father 49. I suffered thinking I would lose them. I did, but 45 years later. It's a huge burden for the children of older parents. Others wrote in to say, hey, it's her body, it's her life, it's her right. We have no ground to question it. The number, 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Well, evidently we struck a nerve in Tampa, in the Tampa Bay area, because we've had calls from all over the country, but we have three callers from Tampa who I think ought to form themselves into a bioethics committee and have this debate over coffee somewhere. Faith, Lisa, and Janet, all listening on WTBN from Tampa, Florida. Three different points to make. We're going to take you in order. First of all, Janet, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Go right ahead, Janet.
I just disagree with the caller you had earlier, 72 years old, and thought it was a great idea that she should be allowed to have that child or conceive through in vitro. I totally disagree with that.
Janet, go ahead and say why. I don't want to give the reasons that might be my own. You give your reasons. Why not?
I personally think she's too old. She needs to make sure she's around to raise that child and not expect her relatives to fill in. She didn't consult those relatives probably before she conceived or was implanted with the fertilized embryos, but it's just wrong. That child deserves to have parents that are going to be there for the duration of her life, and there's no guarantee at 66 and 67 that they will be.
Not that there's a guarantee at younger either. Yeah, of course. There are no guarantees, but we do know the actuarial tables. I mean, we do know that someone at age 67 is likely to have a shorter lifespan than someone at age 32, and yet, you know, I'm the dad, not the mom in our family. That's real clear. But let me tell you, I'm just amazed how much energy a mom has to have. I mean, I just get tired out watching my wife, and much less, you know, changing diapers. And I don't know how many, you know, 70-year-olds really want to do that full time and take on all that responsibility. But I think there's another issue here, and Janet, I want to ask you this. I'm going to ask Lisa and Faith the same question. From a Christian worldview perspective, do you think there's a certain natural limit on childbearing that God's put there with menopause?
Absolutely. I totally agree. If you've already experienced menopause, I don't feel like you should be expecting to have birth. At that point, help take care of your grandkids, but don't bring your children in.
Janet, thanks for that call. I appreciate the point. Faith has a very different point to make, also calling from Tampa. Faith, go right ahead.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Thank you for having me on the show. I agree with two of your other callers. I think that only God can give life, and although I do have concerns about a 67-year-old woman being able to stay around and raise her kids, if God allowed her to conceive that child by whatever method, that was his will, and no one knows what that child is going to grow up to be or what that child is going to grow up to do. So I think that if he allowed it to be, then he allowed it to be for a reason.
Yeah, Faith, and I understand that point, and yet I want to challenge you just a little bit on that, because all kinds of technologies can be used to create a child, including eventually human cloning. You also have rape, and pregnancy can result from rape, but that doesn't mean the rape was the right thing. We certainly want to welcome that child and protect that child as God's gift, but that doesn't mean that you would say that the rape was the right thing. So obviously I'm not equating IVF with rape and with a 67-year-old woman, but, you know, again, I just want to make clear I'm understanding you. You would still advise against this, right?
I would definitely advise against it, but if that's something that God allowed to be, then he allowed it for a reason. And I don't agree with cloning, but as far as in vitro, as much as I know about it, I don't think that there is a problem with it. So I say more power, you know, if that's what God wanted, he allowed it to be.
Well, she's going to need the power and energy. I can guarantee you that. That's true for a woman at 26, much less at 66. Thank you so much for your call, Faith. Another caller from Tampa, Lisa, listening on WTBN. Lisa, you go right ahead.
I'm somewhere in between Janet and Faith. I think that this woman and her doctors made a poor decision ethically, practically. I don't think it was a good decision, but I don't think it should be legislated, because then you run the risk of, where do you draw the line? I'm 42. I've never had a baby. I still think about it, even though it's higher risk at this point. So I could see the AMA maybe having ethical guidelines, but I don't think it should be legislated.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, because in Great Britain, it's not a matter of legislation either. It's the Human Embryology and Fertilization Authority that has the responsibility there, which is kind of equivalent to our AMA or a medical guild, professional association. And I think a lot of Americans were surprised to know that fertility clinics here basically have no common set of rules. And some of the agencies said, we just really don't have any rules related to age. And a part of me agrees with you, Lisa, that legislation is probably not the best way to deal with this. Because I mean, after all, we've seen how the laws sometimes turn out. But I do think there need to be some limits set by those who are responsible for basically giving an ethical seal of approval to medical practices. So, Lisa, that was a thoughtful call. I really appreciate you calling. God bless you. We're going to go to Tallahassee, where Joe is calling on XM. Go right ahead.
Hey, Dr. Mueller, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
Listen, I listen to your show quite a bit, and you do have some, I like your show. You have some, but you have some strange shows on here. This is a good one for me. I don't understand why this woman is even being picked on. She's a sinner. We all have sinned. What can be done about us publicly humiliating her this way? I think it goes back to Jesus and the prostitute. If you haven't sinned, you'd be the first one to throw the stone.
Well,
you're throwing a stone at this woman, and her life's going to be wrecked because of you publicly putting her out to the public like this.
Joe, in all honesty, that's just ridiculous. First of all, she's in Romania, and I'd like to think she's listening to this program, but something tells me that she probably has no idea we're having this conversation. But this is not just one pregnancy that has no relation to all others. There are medical ethical guidelines. I mean, quite frankly, if you follow your logic, there would be no guidelines, and there'd be no way to sanction any doctor who did anything wrong or anything else. Non-judgmentalism doesn't mean we don't say something's wrong. It means that we can't read the heart. And by the way, I have already said on this program, I think this woman is understandably driven by what she says is great regret over having abortions. I appreciate her concern for life, but we have to set guidelines. I mean, don't go to the hospital that doesn't follow any guidelines. There are guidelines on who gets an organ transplant. There are guidelines on what medical procedures are ethical under these circumstances. And I'll tell you right up front, when it comes to cloning and the use of a lot of these technologies, if we don't have guidelines, quite frankly, we're going to be living in a brave new world of utter moral confusion. We're not humiliating this woman. As a matter of fact, she has set herself up. She wanted the publicity. She called the reporters. She wanted the interviews. So, Joe, I appreciate your point, but she has asked for the publicity, and she started the debate. She's entered it herself. Lots of debate to be had on this. We could do this for hours and hours, I think. We've had callers from all over the country. It was interesting to have those three callers from Tampa, each taking a different perspective, bringing a different point. You know, we who are pro-life must recognize God's gift of human life at every stage as worthy of protection. But it means we also must seek a culture of life in which we maximize the opportunity for life to come to completion and birth under the circumstances that God has intended. And that means we've got to go back to the family. We've got to go back to marriage. You know, the situation is, again, I don't believe there are any illegitimate children, but I believe there are a lot of illegitimate conceptions. We'll be continuing this discussion, I think, on other days as well. And I'll be right back with some further thoughts. Well, I now know why some newspapers have had to open special letters sections just on this one issue. There are so many different points to debate and different points to make. Julie's got one. She's been waiting on the line from Tampa, Florida. Go right ahead, Julie.
Yes, sir. I just think that it was wrong. And like the lady said, yes, God allows a lot of things to happen, but there's also consequences to those things God allows to happen. Also, God's word says he opens and closes the womb. And there's a fine line in this whole contraceptive and this whole thing about trying to play God sometimes. And my heart just breaks that if we would just search his word, you know, and find that peace and contentment with him, this would be a much better place.
Julie, what a sweet point to make. I appreciate you calling there from Tampa. We've had a lot of callers in Tampa, and, you know, when you look at this issue, Julie's right. It is a reminder to us that there are so many of these big issues in terms of contraception and the reproductive revolution that we as Christians still need to think through. And a lot of these just don't come down where you have a checklist, right, wrong, right, wrong. Obviously, there are contexts that matter. They come down to whether or not there's a marriage. I mean, let's remember that we are the people. We're the Christians here. We're the ones who are informed by the Bible. We're the ones who know that sex is for marriage and child rearing and procreation is for marriage. And so there are just so many issues here to bring to this particular case in Romania, but also to the big questions about what really builds marriage, what really builds parenthood, and what really affirms the full dignity and sanctity of every human life from the moment of conception until natural death. We as Christians have no choice but to try to think through these issues. We can't just think when we read the headlines that somebody else's business. We'll leave that to the medical ethicists. We'll leave that to the secular world. We'll leave that to the academics and the doctors, the physicians, and the reproductive specialists to debate. The Church of the Lord Jesus Christ has a stake in this. We are the biblical witnesses to the culture of life, and we know that the culture of life is gravely threatened by the culture of death. We're the people who have to be here ready to defend life, whatever the cost, ready to stand for life, unborn, preborn, and born, ready to say we must tackle the hard issues of figuring out whether these technologies can be used ethically and how these technologies may be used ethically. There's too much at stake here just to say it's someone else's business. There's too much at stake here just to say we really don't know whether these are right or wrong. We've got to think through these hard issues. We've got to go back to the Bible. We've got to think about the meaning of life. We have to think about the reality of what it means for God to be the author and protector of life. And we have to think about what it means for the church to be the witnesses to life. I want to end where I made the point earlier. There are no illegitimate children. Let's remember that. But there are illegitimate technologies, illegitimate uses of technology, and there are a lot of illegitimate conceptions. We struck a nerve today. We'll bring truth on the line tomorrow. We'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mohler's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.